Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network Sunday, September 17th, 2017. Yes, I know I'm on vacation, but don't worry. It's all new material. We recorded it ahead of time. This is episode 1423. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Felix Gray. Give your eyes the break they deserve. Felix Gray glasses filter blue light and reduce eye strain without that ugly yellow tint distortion of other so-called computer glasses. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/techguy and try a pair today. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The tech guy, time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that jazz. Big week this week for two reasons. Of course, the Apple event, I talked about that a little bit last show, the new iPhone X, which is going to be very hard to get, I think, in very short supply, kind of like the AirPods were for months. You'll be able to order that October, not for another month and a bit, October 27th for a November 3rd ship date. Maybe some people will opt for the iPhone 8. It's a little less expensive. It's also not quite as innovative. It's really kind of just a refreshed iPhone 7. I don't know. I'm a little more excited, frankly, about the Android side. There's a lot of new Android phones coming. In a week or two, we're going to hear from Google on its new Pixel phone. There's a very nice, I don't think it's available yet. I'm going to be watching, you know, because we don't know exactly when, but LG has a very nice phone, the V30, that it still has a headphone jack. That's a selling point for me. That's going to be interesting. And I just got the Samsung Galaxy Note 8. I thought I'd talk a little bit about that today because it's pretty impressive. It's in some ways everything Apple's trying to do with the iPhone X, but available now. Wireless charging like the iPhone, I like that. That's a real convenience. In fact, I'm very happy about Apple putting wireless charging finally for the first time in their newest iPhones because that means it's now this wireless standard, which is called QI, is now the standard. It's like there's no question. So, you know, bar owners and airports and all, you'll start to see these everywhere. Starbucks has had them for a while, but you're going to see these everywhere. They'll be built into furniture. You can actually already buy an IKEA night table that you just put your phone down, plop it down, and it'll charge. I like wireless charging for that reason. It doesn't charge as fast, but it's kind of convenient. You know, at the end of the day, you just put your phone down on a mat or a pad or, in some cases, on a piece of furniture. And I love the idea of, you know, you go to a bar, you sit down at the bar, you put your phone down, and it's just charging. That's kind of cool. The Note 8 features wireless charging. It's a beautiful, shiny black phone. I think every bit as beautiful as the iPhone X. Same kind of front screen, the OLED screen that I love so much. I have an OLED TV. I love how OLEDs look. And Samsung is, you know, they make these for Apple. They're the king of OLED screens. Gorgeous screen. Not quite as curved as the S8, and I kind of like that. It feels a little bit more squared off. It's a little bit easier to hold. It is tall, which... The S8 Plus was kind of oddly elongated, and that's how Samsung gets a bigger screen, a 6.3-inch screen, in a device that is easy to hold in one hand. It's narrow and tall, and I'm not sure I'm crazy about that, but I have to say it gets the job done. It is very easy to hold. This is such a nice phone. Very fast processor. Here in the U.S., they're using the latest Qualcomm Snapdragon 835. The international version has an Exynos, a Samsung Exynos processor. The one I bought, I bought unlocked from Samsung. In fact, I got a good deal on it. Anybody who had a Note 7, you should go to the Samsung site because they're offering a fairly hefty rebate. I think $435 when you trade in an older phone like an S6 or a Note 5 or even an older iPhone. So if you're trading in a phone, you can really take more than half off the price of this, which is a good thing. At $930, the Note 8 is really expensive. $960 at Verizon. It's like the Apple iPhone X in more ways than one. I do like a headphone jack. It's Type-C charging, which I like because everything I have is now uses that Type-C connector. Most of my computers, many of my phones. Apple's really kind of out in left field with a Lightning connector. I wonder when they're going to go to Type-C connecting, Type-C charging and connecting. It also has a stylus, and that's what the Note really became famous for. Samsung's refined this every time they've come up with a new stylus. They've got better and better. Now you can take notes right on the lock screen, up to 100 pages of notes. It has, if you're an artist, I'm not. You can have a lot of fun with that. It also has something called Line Message, which allows you, it's kind of like Apple's messages. It allows you to do, you know, sparkles and stuff on your text messages. I think that's fun too. It's funny. I think really messaging and emojis are consumer facing. You know, I come from the age of computing where it was about, you know, how many megabytes you have and how much faster your processors. Now it's all about, well, how many sticker books can I get? Can I make my messages sparkle? What about animated emojis? Do you have those? I think that may end up being the big selling point for Apple, is Apple's messages platform, especially with younger people, people under 30, say. And the fact that you can now do this. Did you see this animated emoji? It's a little undignified. They have this executives of Apple being chickens and aliens and animated poop. Come on, really? No animated emojis on the Note 8, but just a very solid, very nice looking phone. Dual cameras, very good cameras. I would say this is certainly one of the top phones of the year. We won't know really what the candidates are, who's in the running, until we see the next Google Pixel. And, you know, actually, we really can't comment on the iPhone X yet. Nobody has one. People have touched them at the event this week. But that's really not enough to review it. What's battery life going to be like? How well does the camera work? Really, the big question mark for me on the iPhone is, how well does the face identification work? Kind of crazy that they got rid of the fingerprint reader on the iPhone. I really think that might be a mistake. The fingerprint reader works so well now on any phone you get, an Android or an iPhone, that it's the easiest, fastest way to unlock it. It's very secure. Although Apple pointed out, I don't know if this is true. No one knows. But they said that with the fingerprint reader, there's a 1 in 50,000 chance that somebody could have your fingerprint. I've heard that number before. But they said the way we do face recognition on the new iPhone X, there's a 1 in a million chance that somebody could duplicate you. Well, with one exception, if you have a twin. They admitted, yeah, well, see, that's less than, how many twins are there? Isn't that less than 1 in a million? If you have a twin, you make sure you trust your twin, because he or she can unlock your iPhone, an identical twin. If you're trying to decide between an iPhone 8 and an iPhone 10, or between an iPhone 8 and iPhone 10 and a Galaxy Note 8, I can't make that decision for you. I think the Note 8 is fantastic. It's gorgeous. Beautifully designed. Samsung solved the problems they've had in the past, I think. Certainly no battery blow-up issues on this Note 8. I'd be very surprised to hear that. Samsung's taken great steps to make sure it doesn't have that explosive feature. I'm lucky because I don't have to decide. I usually carry both an iPhone and an Android phone. But if you had to ask me which one I like better, I'll let you know when I get an iPhone 10. I guess I have to wait. I'm probably not going to buy an iPhone 8. What about you? Are you going to get an 8? Or are you going to wait for the 10? Or are you going to stick with your older iPhone? I think a lot of people, I know a lot of people, my son included, my son and daughter included, who won't buy new iPhones because they like the headphone jack. That makes a lot of sense. Losing the headphone jacks, well, losing the most, you know, easiest way to listen to music. And for them, they're young, they're 25 and 22. That's one of the most important things they do on their smartphone. I'm glad Samsung kept the headphone jack. I hope the rumors that Google's going to abandon the headphone jack are wrong. I think Apple made a mistake. I think it'd be crazy to follow Apple down that road. Anyway, that's kind of my rundown of the two new phones. One I saw and heard about but didn't get to touch, the iPhone X, and one I have and own, and I'm really happy to have it. I've had every Samsung Galaxy Note phone since the very first one. I've always loved them. And I think Samsung has created a worthy successor with the Note 8. I would unhesitatingly recommend it. And I know a lot of you like this phone and have been waiting for it, are very excited. So enough of that. Let's remind you before we go for a break and your calls that we have a great website, techguylabs.com. You can go there and anything I've talked about, links to articles I mentioned, answers to questions, they're all there. So is audio and video from the show. After the show, we put that up. And there's space for you to comment. So if you have a thought or a suggestion about the Note 8 or the iPhone 10, leave it there. That'd be a great place to do it. TechGuyLabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to get to the phones. Lots of calls. Let's see who's first here. It looks like Louie on the line from Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Lou. Is it Louie or Louis? What do you prefer?
I go by Lou.
Hey, Lou.
And I have such a high voice, some people think I'm a lady. That's embarrassing. But
No. You're a guy. I can tell. I'll give you the Ted Baxter. Hello, Lou.
Oh, hello, Leo. Hey, I want to know how much of a C drive I should have. I, at your suggestion, got a Dell XPS 13. It's cool. But I want to repartition it so that my C drive doesn't have my data on.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a lot easier to back things up and to reinstall if I need to.
Sure.
But I want the C drive to be for the operating system and my programs, and then a new D drive to be for my data.
Yeah, that's.
And I need to know how big that C needs to be.
Yeah, that's generally, I don't think it's necessary, but it's generally, I think, good drive hygiene to keep your operating system kind of on its own partition. Even with other operating systems like Mac and Linux, I will do that, and I have a separate data drive. That way, you reinstall the operating system. There's no chance of wiping out the data. It's all there, and it's all intact. It also makes it easy to back up because you just back up your D drive. So, you're right. This is a very important question. If you're going to reallocate, if you're going to partition it, how big should C be? And this is tricky because it's generally hard to expand it later. You can expand it. Modern partitioners will allow you to expand it. But it's limited as the data gets spread out over the hard drive, how much you can expand it by. And so sometimes you can't make it a lot bigger.
Yeah, Windows 64-bit requires 20 gigs.
Can you believe that?
But I also want to have my programs on there.
Right, and this is the problem because 20, if you made a 25 gig partition, that'd be enough for Windows. But we can't predict how big your apps are going to end up being. It depends on what you install. So one way to do that is look at your current computer and just see how much space is taken up by a few different folders. You're going to look at the Windows folder, and you're going to look at the programs folder, and there'll be two of those. There's one for 32-bit apps, and then one for 64-bit apps. That is the one that says x86. You can add up the sum of those. It'll give you some idea, but not everything, because there's other places applications store data and so forth and so on. And you can't really make a separate applications. As much as we'd like to make a separate applications partition, you can't really do that because just the way Windows apps are, they want to be on the same drive as Windows. They want to be on C.
Keep Windows happy.
Yeah. So now you got how big a drive for this new XPS? By the way, good choice. I think those are very nice laptops.
Oh, 1 terabyte.
Oh, you're golden. Oh, you're great.
Well, I do videos. I do videos, so that's what I figured.
So there's plenty of people, myself included in some cases, who have Windows machines that run just fine in 128 gigs. So you could literally take 1/8 of your total, make it be your C drive, and I think you'd be fine. If you want to just be safe, make it 256. There's no way you're going to install, you'd have to install every program in the world to use up 256 gigs. I think 128 would be fine. But if you want to just be safe, 256, that's only a quarter of the total. That leaves you 3/4 of the drive for your data.
Yeah. The more I have for my data, the better, because I like to keep my videos from my comedy appearances and things like that.
Right. Oh, are you a comedian? You're a comedian?
Yeah, I just got back from a 22-state, 3.5-month comedy road trip.
What's your website?
ArizonaLou.com.
Oh, we've talked before. I remember you.
Yeah, we have.
All
yeah,
right. Arizona. And you do charity performances.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I remember you, Lou. I got to come see you someday. You
ought to do that.
You give your profits.
Come out there.
You give your profits to Duet in Phoenix, which provides free assistance to seniors and their caregivers, and that's a great cause. You're America's favorite old man, it says here.
Hey, Google that. I can't help it. I come up number one.
You're number one under America's favorite old man. I like it, Lou. Google approved. It's true.
And you're probably number two.
Yeah, well, I'm getting there. That's for sure. I don't know if I'm America's favorite or just America's old man. So that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm glad you do that. And yeah, now I should say I've been using 128 and 256 gigs as if that's some magical number, and it's not. Those are often the drive. You know, they divide drives up, and there's 128 and 256 and 512 and terabyte drives, and that's just kind of because of binary arithmetic. They usually aren't that big anyway. Those are inflated numbers. But you can make it 240 or 220. There's no magic size. I think a 200 gig drive for Windows and applications would be sure to be enough.
Any pearls of wisdom and cautions in this process?
No, except if you're a gamer. One thing that
not.
You're not. You're America's favorite old man, but you're not a gamer.
Right.
Some applications like Steam, which is my favorite gaming platform for Windows, and I think you know many players, gamers on Windows use Steam. Steam will let you say where your games go, which I think is a very nice feature because games tend to be gigantic. So if you are a gamer and you're worried, well, I'm not sure how much space I'm going to need for games, you can make another partition just for those games, or even better yet, maybe have a second hard drive just for those games, and then you wouldn't really ever have to worry about going more than 100 gigs, I think, for Windows and applications. It's the games that can really add up. 200 gigs should be just fine.
Okay, you're awesome, Leo.
You are too, Lou. America's favorite old man, ArizonaLou.com. Nice to talk to you, Lou.
Nice to
take care.
To you.
Next time when you call, just say Arizona Lou's on the line. I'll know who it is. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Computers are binary devices because it's easy with an electrical switch to have two states, on or off. You know, we're humans have 10 fingers, so we use the decimal system, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then it rolls over for 10, right? In binary, it rolls over for 3 or 2, I guess. So you have 0, which is, you know, with the on-off switch, it's 0 is 1, 0. On is 1. And then if you're going to represent a number higher than 1, you need 2 switches, right? So you've got 0 and 1, and then you can have 2 and 3. And then if you want more than 3, you need 3 switches. So that's kind of how binary works. That's how computers work. And we tend to, thanks to that, talk in numbers that fit that. Because so you've got 2, 4, 8, 16. We double it each time. Each time you double it, you need another bit. 32, 64. Start recognizing these numbers. 64 gigs. 128. 256. 512, I'm doubling it each time, and then 1,024. That's no accident that hard drives are often specced in that. There's no reason they have to be, understand. It's just they do. There's no reason you couldn't have a 104-gig hard drive or a terabyte and a quarter hard drive. There's no magical reason for that. It's just for some reason we all work in binary. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. I hope it didn't confuse you explaining how binary works. That's probably a bad idea, wasn't it? George on the line from Santa Monica, California. Hi, George.
Oh, good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon.
I want to butter you up.
Oh, please.
Before I ask my question, I want to thank you for your talent for everybody is to take technical problems and breaking it down to where the average guy can understand it.
Well, because I'm an average guy. If I don't break it down, I won't understand it.
You're not an average guy. Now, my question now.
Thank you.
Can you explain about Bitcoins?
Oh, Lord, this is a good one. No, it's a great question.
They've been going since like 2009, and I know the price of a Bitcoin now is up to $4,000.
Can you believe it?
What gives it that value?
Nothing.
I don't understand them. I know.
Belief. So, this is a great question. I love it. And I'm going to see if I can do this. I have 8 minutes to explain what Bitcoin is, which is not nearly enough. It's a category of money we call cryptocurrencies. And there are a lot of them now. There's Ethereum is the latest, but Bitcoin is probably the best known. So to understand Bitcoin, you need to step back a little bit and understand what money is. You know, we always think about money as, U.S. greenbacks, Federal Reserve notes, pieces of paper or pieces of metal with a e pluribus unum, and the paint, printed on them and backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. But really, that piece of paper isn't worth anything, is it? It's just a piece of paper. Even a quarter is not worth 25 cents. So what that is, in fact, all currencies are something called fiat currency from the Latin word fiat, which I think means let there be or let it be. Really, those are faith-based currencies. They are valued at a dollar bill's valued at a dollar, not because that piece of paper is worth a dollar, not even because it's backed up by a dollar's worth of gold or silver anywhere, but just because the U.S. government says that's what it's worth. And you can pay your taxes with it. But even what the value of a dollar changes, it's become less valuable over time, hasn't it? A dollar used to be able to buy you a three-piece suit and a hat with two pairs of pants. Now, you'd be lucky if you get a cup of coffee with a dollar. That's just inflation over time. So even the actual value of a dollar has changed. Sometimes people say, well, yeah, if we had the gold standard, the silver standard, it'd be worth, then we'd know what it's worth. But the truth is, people don't like when you say this, but even gold's a fiat currency. The industrial value of an ounce of gold sure as heck isn't worth thousands of dollars. It's valued at that, just kind of magically. We don't talk about this because the faith in money is pretty important to keeping money sensible. But anybody who lived through a hyperinflation, has happened in Zimbabwe, has happened in the Weimar Republic before World War I, knows that, suddenly those pieces of paper aren't even worth a piece of paper anymore. So we think that U.S. money is somehow magical, or dollars are somehow magical, but they're faith-based as well. They're fiat currency as well. So the value of a Bitcoin is kind of similar. It's worth what people say it's worth. We always interpret it in terms of government currencies like dollars, and that changes. Bitcoin was invented by a mysterious person or persons using the handle Satoshi Nakamoto. It's a Japanese name, and you might assume there's a person named that, but nobody's ever been able to successfully find that person. Some people even think he might even be dead, and others say, well, it's not one person, it's many. But whoever it was a mathematical genius and came up with a very clever way of creating a currency that's based on math and hard math problems. And he set it up in such a way that Bitcoins would be mined, created, brought out of nothing by computers solving difficult math problems. Even set it up in such a way that as more Bitcoin was mined, it would be more difficult to mine it. He did it so cleverly that, in fact, it's roughly equivalent to the cost of the power needed to power the computer. So it's hard to make money Bitcoin mining unless you can get very cheap electricity. In fact, most people who are mining Bitcoins are in China, near power plants where they get effectively free energy. Those people are making money, those Bitcoin miners. In fact, they're the real power behind Bitcoin, the people generating it. The database, the ledger of Bitcoin is called the blockchain. And when you install a Bitcoin wallet, you download the entire blockchain, more than 100 gigabytes now of data, that has every transaction ever made in Bitcoin, and will continue to grow as more transactions are made. So it's a completely distributed system. There's no central bank.
There's no company. It's just a group of users who are generating Bitcoin, solving mathematical problems, kind of magically creating it. Bitcoin will be limited, by the way, to avoid inflation. There will be a total number of Bitcoins created. I think it's by 2020 that we won't see any new Bitcoins being created. There'll just be a pool of Bitcoins. And then they can be used by people trading them. And they're really, their value is just by what people say. So in the early days of Bitcoin, somebody bought a pizza. I think he spent 20 or 30 Bitcoins to buy the pizza. It would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars for that pizza had he held the coins. The value's gone up and down just like any stock, just like any market. But it's been trending up lately for a variety of reasons, mostly having to do with news. I think it's very interesting. Governments don't generally recognize Bitcoin one way or the other. You can't pay your taxes in Bitcoin. But there are plenty of exchanges out there that will exchange Bitcoin for real money. You can go to Coinbase and get dollars for your Bitcoins. Trade them in. Where are your Bitcoins? Well, they're nowhere. They're just bits. You store them in a Bitcoin wallet on your computer or on a service like Coinbase with a top secret encrypted password. Your Bitcoin address is a long number. You can make multiple Bitcoin addresses. People can send you number Bitcoin at that address, which gives you some anonymity. That's why Bitcoin's widely used by ransomware hackers who will give you a Bitcoin address, say transfer Bitcoin to this address. You open up your wallet, and wallets have a way of sending Bitcoin. You type in the address you're sending it to and how much you're sending. That gets transferred into their Bitcoin address. It's not completely anonymous because that number is available. So we can always see how much money has been transferred into any Bitcoin address because we all have access to the database, the blockchain, the ledger. It's public. So I think in a nutshell, that is Bitcoin. Is it real? Well, no, but neither is the U.S. dollar. It's real only to the extent the government will back it up and say, okay, well, you can pay your taxes in that, or I mean, if you brought your dollar to a bank, they would give you dollars. You can't get gold for it. So does that satisfy? I know that's kind of it's a strange thing. But really, so is money in general a strange thing. We don't like to think about it because we don't want to undermine the full faith and credit of the U.S. dollar.
It's a strange answer.
It is a strange answer. I have a Bitcoin wallet. I have about 7 Bitcoins in it, and I'm watching this money just go up, and it's like $28,000 now from nothing. It wasn't worth anything. I never bought any coin. I was just given coin by various people. Or you can mine it and create your own.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I was wondering, if you bought a computer and it was let's say, $2,000, you bought it with one Bitcoin, do they give you, is there a breakdown of half of Bitcoin or what?
Yeah, you can break down Bitcoin infinitesimally fractional. So you can give out, give you a 10,000th of a Bitcoin. It's just numbers. Okay. It's just math. There's no coin either, although occasionally people will make up coins, but there is no coin. There's no physical reality to a Bitcoin. But think about it. Most of your financial transactions these days are done electronically, credit cards. You know, they're just bits too. It's a very interesting world. I think it's very intriguing. I do not recommend investing in Bitcoin. That's pretty speculative. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's all kind of made up, but so is the dollar bill. I didn't get into what the SEC has done recently, which is much more complicated. We get into ICOs, and the federal government has decided, SEC has decided that those are regulatable. But to this point, there's no regulation of Bitcoin at all. Governments tend to ignore it. I think in China, I'm trying to remember, I think the Chinese banned it. I think it's a fascinating subject. Well, so it would be taxable in the sense that if I did something and got paid in Bitcoin, that's income. And it would be taxable. You don't get out of it by getting paid in something that's not dollars. but it is an interesting question. What's the value of it? Well, there's no inherent monetary value. There's no inherent monetary value in a dollar bill either. It's fiat currency. It's all made up in the sense that there's no inherent value. You could say there's an inherent value in an ounce of gold, but what is the inherent value in an ounce of gold? It's the, I guess, the industrial value, which is considerably less than the monetary value. Yeah, I feel like they banned it in some places. The reason is, I believe, the anonymity of the transaction. The FDIC doesn't back dollars. What are you talking about? Nobody's backing dollars. If there were hyperinflation, or even just regular inflation, your dollar's worth less and less all the time. There's nobody saying it's worth any particular thing. It's not backed by the gold standard, the silver standard. It's just what people will give you for it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sure there are Bitcoin enthusiasts who would like to quibble with my definition in the last break of Bitcoin. Feel free to call or post your comments at our website. That's actually a great place to do it, techguylabs.com. Every show is broken up into there's a page per show, and then within that, a page per hour and a page per question or segment in that hour. So you can go right to that, which should be what, segment 2, hour 1 of episode 1423. You go right there and leave your comments, because I would love to hear a discussion of all of this. It's a fascinating topic, Bitcoin and blockchain in general. And as I said, Bitcoin's not the only cryptocurrency out there. When we say crypto, it's not exactly hidden. So it's not a really – cryptocurrency is probably not the best name for it, but that's what it's called. Let's go back to the phone. So enough of that silliness. Michael's on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Michael. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Okay, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Michael. What can I do for you?
Okay, we got actually several questions. First of all, I've got a problem with a computer. I've got one computer that does basically nothing, another computer that seems to work all right. What I want to do is move the data from the old computer to the new computer.
Right. But you can't boot the old computer. And in the past, the way you get data from that computer is by turning it on and seeing what's on the hard drive. But here's the good news. Chances are that hard drive still has everything that was on it. You just can't use the old computer to look at it. So the way we need to get the data out of the old computer is by opening it up and taking out the hard drive. The computer's like a human. A computer has a brain. That's the microprocessor. But it also has storage. I guess we store stuff in our brains. The computer separates the thinking part and the storage part. And when the thinking part stops working in a human being, well, we're out of luck. But when the thinking part stops working on a computer, you can still take the storage out, take that drive out. Now, the problem is we now need to attach it to a working computer to read it. I've mentioned in the past a really handy little tool from a company called NewerTech. It's a universal drive adapter. It'll work with any drive, laptop drive, old hard drive, new hard drive. It has the connectors for all of them and the power adapter for all of them. So you connect it to that. And on the other side, and it's got a little electronics in it. On the other side, it's got a USB plug. And it turns any hard drive, any bare bones hard drive, like one you took out of a computer, into a USB drive. Now, you wouldn't want to use it day in, day out like that. You would put it somewhere because the circuitry is exposed and so forth. You'd put it down on the desk and let it sit there, plug it into your new computer, and it should mount up as a USB drive. And assuming that the drive didn't die along with the computer, that the hard drive isn't damaged or something like that, you should be able to see all the data and copy it over as needed onto the new computer. So the company that makes this, and a number of companies, in fact, if you went down to your local, does anybody still have electronic stores in their neighborhood? If you went down to your, if you're in the West Coast, there's Fry's Electronics. They'd probably sell it too. But if you go to NewerTech, NewerTech, Drive.com. And it's on the front page right there. They've got it, the Universal Drive Adapter. It's $45. It lets you hook up any drive and turn it into a USB drive. And that's how you get that data off. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8880. I love it how, well, we get so many calls about lost data. I love it that it just ties right into carbon. Did I answer all your questions, Michael? You said you had a couple.
No, not all of them. That was just one of them. Another one, okay, I need to say that I am totally blind.
Okay.
And I am currently using a computer with Windows 8.1. And I'm trying to figure out how I can access various parts of it.
So, yeah, I mean, that one is, and remember earlier we had a call from a guy who does this for the state of Minnesota. He helps blind users set up their systems. If you look for resources for the blind in your neck of the woods in Nashville, there are government agencies, state agencies, and even non-governmental nonprofits that will help you with learning how to use your computer using accessibility techniques, screen readers, and things like that. They'll often subsidize those because sometimes those programs can be quite expensive. Programs like JAWS can cost thousands of dollars. It's really too much for anybody, any individual to pay. And I think the companies that make these programs assume you're going to have insurance, you're going to have a state agency pay for them. But buying them wouldn't be enough. You really want somebody to train you and show you how to use it and set it up for you. But I know many blind users who use their computer every bit as fluidly, as facilely, as easily as a sighted user, in some cases much better. There's all sorts of interesting techniques. I remember seeing a Braille reader, a Braille screen reader, which is a very kind of brilliant device. You know, Braille is raised bumps, and normally it would be printed, a printed page with raised bumps. But this thing was electronic, and it could take the text that's on the screen and turn it into Braille on the fly. So the bumps would go up and down like a calliope on this device, and I've watched people use it who can read it very, very quickly, maybe even quicker than you could read text on a screen and see everything that the screen's doing. But all of this stuff costs a lot of money and requires significant training. So Lighthouse for the Blind or some other agency in your neck of the woods would be a good resource for you on that. I highly recommend it. One nice little tidbit, I don't know if this is applicable or not, but you're running Windows 8.1. Microsoft, for a while, for the first year of Windows 10, offered a free upgrade for everybody running Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 to Windows 10, an upgrade that I think is well worth it. You'll find it a more reliable, more secure operating system. They're keeping it up to date, but also it'll have better accessibility features. It'll be better. It'll be easier for you to use as a blind user than Windows 8.1 was. And good on Microsoft. They have continued the promotion, the free upgrade for people who are blind or have accessibility issues. So there is an accessibility upgrade from Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 to Windows 10. If you Google it, you'll find out all you need to know about it. You don't need to prove that you're disabled or that you're blind. You can just assert, yes, I have accessibility issues. I need Windows 10 for its improved accessibility, and they'll give you a free upgrade. And once you upgrade that computer to Windows 10, it stays Windows 10. You know, you can erase the drive and reinstall Windows 10 to your heart's content. You have a what they had a funny name for it. It is an entitlement. You have an entitlement to Windows 10 on that computer, and it will stay that way as long as you have that hardware. The other nice thing about Windows 10 is Microsoft says, and I believe them, this is the last version of Windows 10, last version of Windows. Once you have it, they'll just keep it up to date forever. A new update coming out just right about now, actually, what they call the Fall Creators Update. And there'll be another one in the spring of next year and probably in the fall, at least one or two updates every year that will keep that thing fresh and new. You have to wonder how long Microsoft's going to keep doing that. They say, you know, this is it. That's the last version of Windows. We're just going to keep upgrading it. We'll see. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on that one. Hey, it was nice to talk to you, Michael. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks for hanging on the line. More calls to come. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. And then I will continue to answer calls here on the Tech Guy Show. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. Very good resource.
All 1,423 shows are there, and they're free. It's no sign-up. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We're going to interrupt just a moment. The Tech Guy podcast will be right back. But first, a word from Felix Gray. I got to tell you about Felix Gray glasses. These are for you and me, people who look at screens all day. You ever get that, you know, this has to happen, right? 2 or 3 in the afternoon, your eyes are kind of itchy and they're stinging and they're rubbing and they're dry. That is because you're looking at a screen. Your eyes were never designed to stare at a screen all day, right? Felix Gray really helps that in a couple of ways. Now, one thing you absolutely should do is look up every once in a while from the computer and change your focal length. That really will help. The other thing you should do, get a pair of Felix Grays, put them on. They block the blue light, and they do it better than the other so-called computer glasses because instead of just laying a filter on top of the glasses optic, they actually build the lenses. There's no tint. There's no color distortion. They build the lenses with the UV blocking, the blue light blocking built in. That really helps a lot. But they also, you can get them with a little bit of magnification, which makes it so much easier to read the screen. I'm actually now addicted to my Felix Grays. I can't, that's when I go home, that put them on right away. And I wear them all the time I'm looking at screens. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/techguy. And they have a page there that can explain more about why you don't want blue light, why blue light is not ideal for you. And these are beautiful glasses, handcrafted from premium, handmade Italian acetate. They look great. You won't be embarrassed to wear them. Lisa and I both wear Felix Grays all the time at home. Take a look. You can actually get them and try them and see if you like them. Both non-prescription and reading lenses are currently available, but they are going to do prescription glasses soon. So Felix Gray will be the place to get your regular glasses as well. So if you do need reading glasses, they go from +1 to +2.5, which is enough for most people. I'm +1.5. Actually, +1 works fine for me, but +1.5. You can also add a little bit of magnification, and I highly recommend that. Just +0.25, just the tiniest bit of magnification. And especially if you're looking at fine print, you find yourself, you can just check today when you go home or you're looking at the screen. Do you squint a little bit? Do you sometimes lean forward when you're reading the screen? Get the Felix Grays with a little bit of magnification. All orders include free shipping and free returns, so there's absolutely no risk. Try them for yourself. Just wear them. All you need to do, wear them a couple of days, and you will see why you need Felix Grays. Give your eyes the break they deserve. Felix Gray, FelixGray, glasses.com/techguy. Try them. You'll discover a smarter way to work. And we thank Felix Gray, not only for the glasses, but for their support of the Tech Guy Show. FelixGrayGlasses.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Hour 2 of the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte here. We're talking computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, Galaxy Note 8s, iPhones, augmented reality, Apple Watch, anything on your mind, new Apple TV. We talk tech every day at this time. I'm so glad you're here. In fact, let's get right back to the phones. We've got many calls. Hours to go before I sleep. Linda in Quincy, Illinois. Hi, Linda.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great.
I'm so happy to be talking to you.
Well, I'm thrilled you hung on for so long. I appreciate
it. Well, hey, here's my question. My husband and I are going on a cruise to Alaska next July.
Oh, how fun. You're going to love it.
Well, we're looking forward to it, and I've been told the two things that you need to take besides a compatible partner are good binoculars
yes.
and a decent phone. I mean, decent camera. So I would like to get a Galaxy S8 by then, but I'm not buying it now for $750.
Yeah, it'll be a lot less in a year.
So
there'll actually be an S9 in a year.
Well, I need some advice here.
So let me tell you a couple of things. First of all, the binoculars will probably be on board. Ask the cruise line, but whenever I've gone on an Alaska cruise, they've had binoculars in the room. So ask the cruise line. Then you could take that $150 and put it towards a better camera. The problem you're going to have, you're going to see a lot of glaciers.
Right.
You're going to see stuff in the distance. A camera phone does not zoom very well. That's the one thing. Camera phones are great now.
I mean, the image quality is superb. And when you go, you know, you go into Sitka and you see the salmon runs and you go up there, the camera phone will be fine. This galaxy will be fine. But when you're seeing something in the distance, what'll happen? You'll take a picture of the phone and those glaciers that looked so big and beautiful in real life are going to be itsy beatsy teeny tiny.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so I wouldn't choose your phone based on the camera, and I wouldn't rely on the phone for your camera.
Okay.
But the good news is for not much more, in fact, probably for less than a Galaxy S8, you can get a very nice point-and-shoot camera with 10x zoom. Optical zoom, that's what you want. The camera phone does digital zoom. It simulates zooming in by blowing the picture up. But you know what happens if you've ever blown a picture up on your computer.
You lose the detail.
It gets pixelated. It looks ugly, right? The same thing happens with your camera phone. So with an optical zoom, your lens is actually just like a telescope zooming in, or binoculars zooming in. And it makes a much better image. My in-laws went to Alaska this year. Uh-huh. And I sent with them a camera, probably more expensive than your budget, but a really nice Panasonic Lumix LX10. And I think they're probably around, they're less than an S8, let's put it that way, around $600 right now.
Okay, but what was it again, a Panasonic?
Panasonic LX10.
Uh-huh.
But there are similar cameras that are very good. Sony makes some very good cameras in the point-and-shoot. My favorite point-and-shoots after the Panasonic are the Canon Elfs. And they're very compact. They're small, as small as, if not even a little bit smaller than a smartphone.
Uh-huh.
And they will get much better images for you. So I'd look at the Canon Elf. Let me see what model, you know. Basically, you can ELPH is what ELF stands for. And basically, these are image stabilized. They do well in low light. They start at around $150.
Okay.
So you could still get your S8.
Okay.
And get a decent camera. And I just think you're going to get better results.
Is there a particular model of that?
Well, they start at $150 and they go up adding features and so forth. So I would look at what you want to spend, basically.
Okay.
You know, but any of the Canon PowerShot cameras have 10x zoom. That means the iceberg that is 300 feet away, you can zoom up and you'd see a penguin on it and it would be, you know, full size.
And then would that be good in low light also?
Absolutely, because they have optical image stabilization and that's what you're looking for. Camera phones do not do as well in low light.
Okay, so, wonderful.
Yeah, a good camera, point-and-shoot camera, would probably do you better. Look at the Canon PowerShots. If you're willing to spend a little extra money, man, that Panasonic LX. The other thing, that LX10, the other thing that's nice about that is it shoots 4K video.
Oh.
And what I love to do, it has this dedicated little red video button on the camera. What I love to do is interpose stills with short 5 or 6 second video clips. Because it brings the trip to life. And then you can make a slideshow that has stills and then movement and sound and then stills and then movement and sound. And it really is fun.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
It would be very cool.
Yeah. A great photographer named Ray Maxwell suggested this to me many years ago. And I've started doing that on all my trips. And it really is the – but, you know, obviously it's not going to be for a photo book. It'd be for a movie that you'd show on the TV.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, wonderful.
Have a wonderful cruise. You're going to love it.
Also about the Galaxy 8, I mean, I still want to get one. So I have an S4 now.
Yeah, it's time. You could get one. The prices have already started to drop. You know, once the Note 8 came out, the prices on the S8 started to go down. And certainly long before they'll come out with an S9 or whatever the next generation is next spring.
Uh-huh.
So watch for that. And as soon as that comes out, I bet you could get an S8 for free or close to it. If you're willing to extend your contract with your carrier.
Okay.
You go into Verizon or whatever and you say, look, I want to stay with you guys, but I need a new phone. I want that S8. And they'll say, well, fine, the S9's out. Why don't you take this for free?
Okay, great. Well,
generally, that's
so much,
how that works.
Leo.
My pleasure. Really nice to talk to you. Have a great trip. Alaska is a good... Oh, she didn't mention the third thing. You need binoculars, you need a good camera, and you need a warm coat. I know you're going in July, but it can be... chilly and gloomy. I think we put a lot of burden, and I admit the camera phones are getting better and better and better, and Samsung and Apple both are really pushing the envelope on this. Actually, Google too. In a month, we should see the next Google Android phone, the Pixel 2, I expect that'll have a superb camera. The current Pixel has a superb camera. All of these phones are really good, but that's superb camera for a phone. I know the market for point-and-shoot cameras has disappeared ever since these phones have started to proliferate, because people say, well, I already have a good camera on my phone. And it's true. For close-ups, you know, for normal stuff, it's fine. It's for the distant stuff. It just doesn't do it. There's one maybe exception. Motorola makes a phone. You see some ads for it these days, the Z Force Play or something like that. Motorola's Z phones have snap-on backs. They do have an optical zoom, a 10x zoom Hasselblad back that you could, but that's an additional several hundred bucks. And it's still not a great, by the way, not a great camera. You'd do better if you spent, you know, $500 on a great point and shoot. You'd get great images. It'd last longer. It's decouple the two. And, you know, I wonder actually how much longer we're going to be able to buy point and shoot cameras. I feel like that's going to be superseded. Let's see, I have a minute to go. Let's see if I can get in one more call from Alan in L.A. Hi, Alan.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well.
Listen, my brakes on my car are kind of...
can't help you. I can't help you with anything with tech.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm right across the street from the Snapchat complex here in Venice.
Wow, neat.
I just thought that'd be nice for you to know.
They're going to be having quite a party soon, I'm sure, with all that money they got from their IPO. Get
my
ready.
God, are you kidding?
Yeah.
It's sick. Well, listen, the reason I called was I wanted to find out about SDR radio, because I'm a former ham, and I wanted to get back into it, you know, but all I can think about is like Hal Crafters and Johnson.
Well, you know what's interesting? These days, if you go out and buy, I have an ICOM. I'm a ham also. I have an ICOM radio. That's basically a software-defined radio in what looks like a hardware radio. Nowadays, all the radios are software-defined.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because why not? It's upgradable. It's programmable. ICOM sells modules that you put in that's basically just software. So if you have a PC or a Mac, there are tons of programs out there that will let you run software-defined radio on your PC. So you don't need... Nowadays, you really don't even need a ham setup. Just get an SDR. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls still to come. Yeah, I don't know what the best software is, but if you Google SDR, there's a ton of choices. Often it'll have an external device that you plug in, but that's more for the antenna than anything else, right?
Well, I saw this, a USB thing. It had an antenna on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I didn't know what, you know, it's about $35 it looked like.
Yeah.
Something like that.
See, well, tell anybody, but that $10,000 ICOM radio is really mostly just a chassis to support software-defined radios.
Really? Well, what about this? I got this Alcatel OneTouch cell phone, you know, piece of junk.
Yeah.
And can I plug that into this somehow?
Well, I know a lot of hams will do radio with their phone. In fact, I remember being on a cruise ship and watching somebody on his smartphone, transmitting because they use the internet to do it. It's a little different, you know.
Wow.
You have to decide whether, well, do I have to use an antenna to be a true amateur radio enthusiast, or do I mind using the internet? If you don't mind using the internet, you could do anything that you've been doing on a Hallicrafter. Times 10 on the internet. You know, we have a podcast called Ham Nation that is a great ham show. If you want to get back into the hobby, that's the show I'd recommend. If you go to Twit, you can listen to all the back episodes, and they've talked a lot about software-defined radio.
Go ahead. What my real interest is CW.
Yeah, me too. That's my plan. Someday I'm going to learn Morse code because I think it'd be fun. You could certainly do that.
I know it. When I got my ticket back.
We didn't have to when I got mine. Go to twit.tv/HN for Ham Nation. Bob Heil, Gordo does it. Don Wilbanks, Valerie. It's a great team of people. And they have, let's see, 300 plus shows they've done now.
Uh-huh.
And it'll get you right back into the hobby. They talk about all the different kinds of ham there is, including nowadays a lot of ham is done on computers. This guy was using Echo Link. That's on his phone. That's a very popular way to do it.
You know, the funny thing about ham radio is I really don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah, that's why I want to do CW. I talk to people all day.
I know.
I just want to go dit 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 dot dot. Yeah, and just do, you know, mostly I want to do DSL. I want to do, you know, long distance reception.
Yeah, and I want a QRP. I want a small CW rig.
Yeah,
you know, and
that's an interesting question. Could you do? I'm sure you could do CW on a computer. Absolutely, and certainly on a phone. You just need to get a little bit of hardware. You need a key that would hook up to the hardware, obviously, and then you could use. And then you know, there's lots of data based like Echo Link. Echo Link's the first one to look at data based ham.
Echo Link.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's great talking to you, man. I really appreciate that. And
get back into the hobby. It's a great hobby.
Oh, I know. I don't know. There's something that's drawing me to it. I mean, I just turned 75, man. I got my ticket when I was like 16. You know.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I decided my call was great. W2BUZ.
Oh, you know, I wonder if you get that back.
Well, the guy that had it died.
Oh,
a year and a half ago. And it takes 2 years for them to recycle
perfect.
It.
Perfect.
I don't know.
Get your call sign back. Mine's W6TWT. I love it.
I love that.
Yeah. Echolink.org. They have software that you can run on a PC that'll let you do Echolink. It's free. You have to have a license, but you just renew your license and you're good to go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, man. You have a great show, and I love listening to you. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Dennis on the line. I'm sorry, Danny. Sorry, Danny on the line from New Jersey. The print's very small, Danny. I'm sorry I misread your name. Hi, Danny.
Hi. How's everything?
Everything's great. Welcome. Thank you for hanging on.
Well, no problem. My pleasure. Thank you for helping me.
I hope I can help you.
I hope so, too. I have two questions. One of them should be super simple. The other one you're going to want to punch me in the eye for.
Uh-oh.
Fortunately,
I can't reach you through the radio, so I think you're safe. Go ahead.
You have a lot of people. I flew out to Portland with my MacBook Pro. I had it in sleep mode, went through TSA, no problems. Flew down to California, again in sleep mode, no problems. Flew back from California to New Jersey, opened up my laptop, and I get the missing...
The question mark blinking. Is it still a floppy drive that blinks? Used to be. I think now it's probably not.
Well, this is an SSD.
Yeah. No, I know. But, I mean, the icon that Apple shows you, it means I can't. There's no drive in here.
It's a folder.
It's a folder now. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're seeing that folder with a question mark.
Yes, sir.
Oy. First of all, I don't think it's the X-ray machine.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's the jostling. And that's not, you know, it's not unusual. Most hard drives have gotten pretty robust and, you know, they retract the heads and they have soft landing features and so forth so that jostling doesn't hurt them. But think about it. Well, you said it's an SSD. It's not a spinning drive.
No, sir. And it was a carry-on.
Yeah, good. Yeah, SSDs are much less prone to, there's no moving parts, so they're much less prone to damage. That doesn't mean they're impervious. They can't, you know, they can break. Golly. So there is, Apple, just like Windows, has a recovery. You can reboot and hold down Option R when you are rebooting to go into recovery mode. You could at least inspect it and see if there's a drive in there. It may say, well, there's two possibilities. One is it may say, I don't see a drive. In which case, that's a little more catastrophic than if it sees a drive but doesn't see any data on the drive. You can run Disk Utility and run the repair mode. My experience with Disk Utility's repair mode is doesn't do very much. Do you have a backup? Do you have a backup of that data?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. So we're not going to go crazy here.
No.
So worst case...
I did.
Oh, you did this?
To Disk Utility, and it did see the drive. I was just wondering if I could use one of the data rescue or something like that to get it back.
You might be able to if it could see the drive. That's a good start. That means it didn't lose the connection. The drive itself hasn't died electrically. It means most likely that something happened that deleted the catalog, and usually that means the data is still there. It just can't find it.
Yes.
So I don't, the Mac tool scene isn't quite as rich as the Windows recovery scene. If you pulled it out of a Macintosh and used an adapter, as I was talking about earlier with Michael, to look at the drive, you could use Windows tools. But there aren't a whole lot of choices in the Mac recovery world. In fact, I think we're down to just a couple. Let me ask the chat room. I haven't used one of these in ages. What they recommend?
I do own Drive Rescue.
Drive Rescue. That's
Disk Warrior and Tech Tool Pro.
Have you tried any of those? Those are the three.
I did not think about taking out the drive. Maybe it did get a little jostled and it's just getting power or whatever, but I could do that. I do have a toaster, so I could plug it in.
So all three of those are pretty much it as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Besides Apple's own disk utility. I don't, of the three, I don't know. I don't know which is the best, to be honest. Disk Warrior, what you'll do is you'll have a Disk Warrior disk or USB, and you can boot from it, or Tech Tool Pro if you want. You could boot from it and run its recovery tools.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is you have a backup. If it doesn't recover it, then just try formatting it and starting over and see if it's okay. Just because it failed doesn't mean the drive's bad.
I understand.
This is interesting. For an SSD, they're new enough that I'm not sure what the failure scenarios are for SSDs. Strikes me if you don't see it, it might really be dead. It's not like SSDs have, I guess the catalog sector could have been clobbered. I'm not sure even how. This is a very interesting problem. I haven't yet had problems with SSDs. I always assume, certainly with things like camera memory, which is also solid state, if I have any problems with it, I just get rid of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what a recovery of an SSD would even look like. This is one for Steve Gibson, our hard drive expert. I will ask him the next time I talk to him on Tuesday and see what he knows about this kind of thing. There's no head crashes, right? Because there's no heads. It's just electrical. It's electrical read and write.
Yeah,
you stumped me. But this is good, Danny. You're obviously a longtime Mac user. You have all those tools. And if they're up to date, I would pick one of them and boot and see.
Okay, so I got the more complex question.
All right.
You want to punch me out.
Now, here's the one. That's not the one I'm going to punch you for, huh?
No, sir.
What's the one I'm going to punch you for?
I have a 2009 MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And I purchased Windows 10. Apple Boot Camp is not allowing me to install Windows 10 because it's maxing out at 8.9. I'm sorry, 8.1.
Yeah. So do you have the latest? Do you have Yosemite on there? Do you have the latest operating system or Sierra? I should say.
No, I don't have. I do not. I do have.
That's why. So you have older Boot Camp. So they didn't initially support 10. They didn't have drivers for 10. But they do now.
So with El Capitan, I just need to upgrade it?
If you could upgrade it, I would upgrade it to the latest operating system you can run on that 2009 MacBook and then try Boot Camp. Because, they didn't support Windows 10 when it first came out because they didn't have the drivers for it.
Okay. It's a Mac Pro, not a MacBook Pro.
Oh, it's a Mac Pro.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
And I got it completely, fully loaded. Titan video card. 128 gigs of RAM, 5 internal drives.
You might just be able to, it might be worth a try, just boot up Windows.
Okay.
Directly. That's interesting. So it's the cheese grater Mac.
Yes, sir.
That's what we call it.
I did boot up to the, directly to the drive, I'm sorry, to the USB for Windows.
Yeah.
But with all my internal drives,
you don't want to lose that.
Which drive?
Yeah. I think you should try updating because the newer boot camps support Windows 10. I think it's just a question of updating the operating system.
Okay.
And those are not, don't throw that cheese grater out. Those are nice. It sounds like you've upgraded a lot.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah. The Mac Pro that succeeded it was a terrible mistake. Even Apple admitted that.
I know.
And I wish they'd just go back to the original cheese grater with all those slots and drive bays. Those things were incredible. And you've obviously maxed it out. Hey, thanks for the call. I'm not going to punch you. That's a great question.
Well, thank you so much.
I don't mind that at all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll never hit you. More of your calls coming up. Oh, I know what that music means. It's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. He's here. Visits us every week to talk about digital photography. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I am well today. I am well. I'm looking forward to taking a lot of pictures, and with your help, there'll be better pictures, I hope.
Well, let's hope. But today I don't really want to talk about how to take better pictures.
Oh.
I thought for a little change, we might be talking about some camera tech topic.
Oh, I like that. You know me. I've got gas.
Well, yeah. And this is also for the nerds who listen to the show, the tech geeks. You probably know this. Your camera, if you take your camera in your hand, it has this bump on the top.
Yes. I've got a camera in my hand. It has
this
a
big
bump
in the middle on the top. And most cameras have that. And for some cameras with an electronic viewfinder, there's a little television screen in there and some magnifying glasses.
Yes.
If you take your big DSLR, it's a slight little bit different. Because there are two types of bumps on those cameras, and one's called the pentaprism, and one's called the pentamirror.
Now,
and I wanted to talk about the difference between these.
A point and shoot often doesn't have this bump, so if you're looking at your point and shoot or your camera phone and you don't see it, don't get disturbed. This is
if you have a bump on that one, that might be another issue on that camera.
But this is more for cameras that have interchangeable lenses, right?
True. And again, for interchangeable lenses, cameras with a built-in electronic viewfinder, that's where a little screen is built into the camera. But if you have a DSLR, that the principle of the DSLR works in a way that the light falls in through the lens, and then there's a mirror. That's why it's called a single lens reflex, an SLR, and the R is the mirror, pointing that light upwards in the camera. So the sensor that normally sees the picture doesn't see the picture. It's being reflected upwards onto a focusing screen.
Yeah.
It's a little glass, like ground glass screen. And now, interestingly enough, on top of that, there can be two different kinds of things now. One is a prism, which is completely made of glass. Mm-hmm. And the other is a mirror box. It's hollow. And that's called a pentamirror. So if you have ever looked at camera specs, at the tech specs from cameras, that's what those two things mean. Now we'll go into a bit more detail here, because first question, why is that thing needed anyway?
Yeah.
What's that for? Okay, so well, you have a mirror, and then that light has to get to your eye somehow.
Yeah.
And you could just have another mirror there. You know, like when you, as a kid, you might have built a periscope out of a tube and two mirrors, and that works just fine. You can look around the corner this way. The problem is that picture would be upside down and reversed on the sides. So that prism bounces it around in a very specific way so that the picture gets right side up and you can just see it as normal. So that's why that is there. Now,
so it's fixing it. It's a prism
it's fixing it. Yeah.
Okay.
It's fixing it. Okay. Now,
It's funny because that explains why in my really old Rolleiflex camera, the images were upside down and backwards. They weren't fixing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's because the old Rolleiflex, the two lens reflex, the so-called TLR, they do not have that prism in there. Well, most of them don't.
And let me tell you, it's not easy taking a picture when it's upside down and backwards. It takes some practice.
It does take a lot of practice. So, again, there's one kind that is a prism, which is made from glass. The other is a mirror box made from mirrors. Now, that doesn't in the resulting picture, that doesn't make any difference because the photo doesn't care. The photo is taken totally different, totally outside of that prism. But if you get one of those cameras with a prism, you will get a brighter picture than with a mirror, because in the mirror box, that these light rays have to pass through glass, air transitions more often, that loses some light. Another thing with the mirror is that, well, it's an empty box. So there's always a chance of like dust stuff coming in there, which for some cameras might become a problem. And the interesting thing, but of course, why they do it is a mirror box is just way cheaper and way lighter to produce than a prism. Cameras, that's why these big, big professional DSLRs are usually more heavy. One of the reasons is that that there's a prism in there, that there's a piece of glass in there. Interestingly enough, if you've ever seen a prism, it reflects light around the corner just fine, but only up to a certain angle. If the angle gets too small, then the light will leave the prism. And that is the case with some of the surfaces of the prism in your camera. So if you've ever seen a prism, if you took that one out of your camera, you would see that it has actually mirrors on the outside. It is a mirrored surface. It is
To keep the light in?
To keep the light in. It only has two openings, and the one is at the bottom. That's where the focusing screen is. And then the other is at your eye where the light comes out again. I found this interesting. I didn't even know that mirrored part. Now, where does that become important? Well, how is that relevant to anyone listening to this? There is, well, it's a cost factor pretty much. If you buy a camera below a certain, let's say, mid-range, then usually cameras come with pentamirrors because, again, they're just cheaper to produce. They're just lighter, and everything makes more sense to use mirrors. But again, it doesn't really make any difference for the photo that you take. You take a picture, and what happens is that whole system up on top is completely not there, because that mirror that initially bounces light upwards towards that prism just flips up, and the light goes through to the sensor. So this really kind of doesn't make any difference for the pictures you take. It just makes a difference for when you look through that camera. Prism gives you a brighter picture. The mirror is cheaper and a bit lighter, but that's the main differences.
Very interesting stuff. You know, and it's funny because I got out a couple of cameras here, and I'm looking at them. And, of course, one is a mirrorless camera, the one I currently use, which is a Sony, and one is an older camera, the Canon 5D, an older camera of mine, and it has that prism. So if I take off the lens, and you could do this at home, don't do it if it's dusty, don't do it if you're at Burning Man, you can actually see what Chris is talking about, the mirror and the prism, or maybe a mirror, depending on your camera. Above, Chris Mark.
It won't really look any different from the outside.
Yeah, no, you have to take off the lens to really see that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's okay to take off the lens and look inside, right?
Sure. If you're not in a dusty environment,
you will
open the camera anyway when you change the lens.
Yeah, I have to do it. It's funny. I do it really quickly, hoping nothing will get in.
Oh, we can do an entire episode on that, on how to change a lens. It's very controversial.
Oh, I wouldn't mind talking about that.
You'll get a lot of emails.
I'm looking in my Sony, and they call them mirrorless because they don't have that mirror, right? And all I see is a sensor right there. I mean, right there. That's on the other
but
side of the lens.
But it still has a bump. That camera still has a bump on top,
but
that's
for?
Where they hide. Well, that's where they hide a screen in. And then when you look into that thing on the back, that's where you see a screen instead of a prism.
A little version of the LCD below it.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris Marquardt covers cameras, photography, and the creative process as well as the technical process. It's nice because he's kind of a geek. I probably should explain. I said I'd have gas, and I think people maybe didn't know what I meant at the beginning. I meant gear acquisition syndrome. I'm always all about the gear. If you want to know more about Chris and his work, discoverthetopfloor.com is his website, discoverthetopfloor.com, and he'll be back next week. We have an assignment we're working on.
The current assignment is still up. It is...
You don't remember either, do I?
Shadows. Yes, it is.
So we're going to give you a few more weeks before our assignment review. The way this works is you take a picture. You can take as many as you want. The whole idea is really to get out there and take pictures that illustrate the word or concept shadow, and then post it to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group on Flickr.com. Make sure you put shadow or shadows in the tag so we'll know. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will welcome you into the group, and maybe in a few weeks we'll review some of the best. Thank you, Chris. Leo Laporte.
Absolutely.
The Tech Guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. David on the line from Anaheim. I was just down in Anaheim. Hi, David.
Hey, Leo. Thanks so much for taking my call, man. I'll forgive you for not stopping by.
Well, I'm coming back next week for the big podcast expo. They call it. Two weeks in a row in Anaheim. I was down at Disneyland last week, and next week I'll be down for the podcast movement, I guess they call it. What can I do for you?
Great.
Yeah.
I have a question. I have an iPhone, iPad, but I run a PC for most of my work. And I'm debating about switching phones. So I've got a bunch of books loaded down from iTunes, and wondering if there's a way to port those over and read them on a PC, given the, what's it called, DRM?
Yeah, they have DRM in them. Those iTunes books are Audible books, and that's what iTunes gets its audiobooks from. And Audible's DRM does work on every platform. Windows has an Audible app. I'm pretty sure you could use the Audible app to listen to them. If not, well, then you'd have to install iTunes for Windows.
Well, I've got that, but is there, if I port it over to a, to a Note phone or another?
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, okay.
And I don't think having iTunes on a PC will let you read the books.
It
won't.
It
won't let you listen to them.
Oh, interesting. Oh. Huh. So, my only... If Apple hasn't modified the Audible book format, then you just put the Audible app on your phone, and you should be able to read them. But I don't know if Apple, maybe the chat room knows. Does Apple, when it takes an Audible book and sells it through iTunes, do they modify it in some way? I mean, do you need something special to play it back, like iTunes?
You know, I didn't even know those were Audible books.
Yeah, that's who Audible gets their books from.
Oh.
Yeah, of all things. These are audiobooks, right?
No.
Oh, I misunderstood. I'm so sorry. When you said iTunes and books, you're talking about iBooks, the iBooks reader.
Yes,
I'm so sorry. I misunderstood. So you are buying books from Apple's iBooks store. Yeah, you have to strip out the copy protection if you want to read them on some other platform.
Is there a way to do that?
Sure there is.
I mean, I don't want to do something illegal. But
well, it's technically illegal, but for crying out loud, you already bought the book.
Well, that's the point. I'm not going to resell them.
You're not. So the DRM on those books isn't very strong. Let me just see if Caliber will do it.
That's one that I've heard about.
Yeah. So the Apple format, I'm looking it up real quickly. The Apple format is an EPUB format, which is good news because that's a standard format, but they put some copy protection on it. So there are programs that will strip out the copy protection. I'm seeing a number of names. The problem with these, they're often fly by night, you know. Cause
well, that was my concern because I know even with Calibre that they don't do it natively. That you could get
they'll call a plugin,
plugin. Yeah.
So I'm looking at a company called TunesKit at TunesKit.com that has a program called iBook Copy for Mac. Now, here's the good news: they have a free trial. You have to run it on a Mac first.
Don't have that.
You don't have a Mac.
No.
Well, there must be a Windows program that does this. Yeah, this is, by the way, why I don't recommend buying books with copy protection. Unfortunately, everybody who sells books generally puts copy protection in. At least if you get them from Amazon, that anywhere you can run a Kindle reader, it'll work. The EPUB format they use has to be converted.
Yeah, I think my concern was just getting something, like you said, that's fly by night or, you know, that's has some kind of payload on it.
Yeah. Supposedly, Adobe Digital Editions Home or Ocular will open those books, Dr. Mom is telling me in the chat room. So this is a good question. How can I read my iBooks on Android? This is a very good question.
And I'm sorry, you said Ocular and then Adobe?
OK, OKULAR, Ocular, or Adobe Digital Editions Home. And what we're going to do is we'll put this up in the show notes because the chat room's giving me a lot of information. Here's one from the Apple communities. I have quite a few books downloaded to my iPad. I'd like to transfer them to my Windows PC. Boy, there's no iBooks app for PCs, though. That's the problem. Gosh, I hate copy protection. You bought this book. You own this book. If it were a paper book, you wouldn't have this question. It's a shame that companies are so paranoid. Yeah, so I think we're going to have to just refer you to these discussion threads. There's another one on Stack
Exchange. Oh, no, that'd be great.
Yeah, we'll put them in the show notes, techguylabs.com.
And one last question on that thread is, is the DRM protection the same on a book, on a TV show, on a movie?
No, it's different.
Ah.
Unfortunately. Okay. So things that will strip it out of a movie or a TV show is not the same. Here's a Stack Exchange thread. You can use free... It says if it's not DRM... if your book is DRM protected, open iTunes, select the ebook, choose File, choose Get Info... No, that's just to tell you it's DRM protected. So you can see if it is DRM protected. DRM stands for Digital Rights Management. In other words, copy protection.
Right. I think pretty much all of their stuff, they may have maybe some public domain stuff, but, you know, if you got a Dan Brown book or Ludlum or somebody like that, I'm pretty sure it's going to have DRM on it.
Boy, is that frustrating. So, I'm not sure Dr. Mom is right, but try it with Adobe Digital Editions Home or Ocular and see if they will read the copy through the copy protection. It sounds like it will. The Adobe Digital Editions Home, which is available on the Google Play Store, will open that book. But it'll cost you nothing to find out. It's a free download.
Right. So I would download that from Google Store to my PC and then just...
No, this is actually for the Android phone. So you'd put it on your Android phone, and then you'd have to get those EPUB files from the iBook Store. I think you could figure out how to do that, transfer it to the Android phone, and then see if it could open it up.
Yeah.
Okay. That's worth a try anyway. And then we'll keep looking. That's a... You know, boy, I hate copy protection. This is a ridiculous...
If,
I
mean, you spent... You know, stop. Go ahead.
You bought the book.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. Hey, Leo, I appreciate it, man.
My pleasure. I hope we can find something for you, because that's ridiculous. News at the top of the hour coming up. I want to thank Michael Cozio, our musical director, for such a good job today playing the tunes. And, of course, our call screener today, the lovely and talented Kim Schaffer, for answering the phones. A reminder that everything we talk about is available on our website at techguylabs.com. That's free. As I mentioned in the last caller, we put everything up there, page by page. Each show has a page. And then within each page, there's the by hour and even by call. So you can go right there, find the show you're looking for. And, by the way, add your comments, which is much appreciated. There's no charge. No sign-in. We do ask you to sign in using your Twitter or your Google or your Facebook account if you're going to leave a comment. That's just to avoid spam. We don't harvest your email addresses. I'm not interested. We'll have more of your calls in just a bit. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our Tech Guy show brought to you today by Rocket Mortgage, as always, by Rocket Mortgage. I went to a bank to get our loan the last time, and what a mistake. First of all, it took more than a month. So long that the people we were buying the house from said, look, we're going to sell it to somebody else. This is a seller's market. You're risking that beautiful, perfect dream house by not going to Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is fast. You'll understand exactly what's going on. And it's from the best mortgage lender in the country, Quicken Loans. They're just superb. All you have to do is go to their website, quickenloans.com, and you look at all the J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards year after year for mortgage origination and mortgage servicing. I mean, they really are great. But I like them. There's a special place in my heart because they love geeks. And they made a product for us geeks, an entirely online loan approval process. There is no going to the bank. There's no going to the attic to go through boxes of paperwork to find your pay stubs or your check statements. You don't need any of that. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Maybe you're not buying a house right now, but bookmark that for when you do. If you're going to an open house today, you better, you know, bring it with you. Because you can literally, you know, honey, I like this. Oh, good. Well, should we buy it? Yes. Let's get the loan. And you can, before you leave the open house, you go through a couple of things. You give permission for your financial records because they have trusted partners with all the big financial institutions. They crunch the numbers based on your assets, income, and credit. And it doesn't take a month. It took more than a month with my loan. It doesn't take weeks. It doesn't take days. It takes minutes. It literally, you can do that at the open house. Bum, bum, bum. They'll crunch the numbers based on your income, assets, and credit. They'll give you the loans you qualify for. You pick the term. You pick the rate. Boom, you're done. And you can hold it up to the realtor and say, see, we're approved. And by the way, that is a huge advantage if you're shopping for a house. RocketMortgage.com/techguy. That's the place to go. RocketMortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Check them out. You may not be buying a house today, but bookmark this. Put this in your browser, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And we do thank them for making a great product for us geeks and for supporting our Tech Guy podcast. Now back to the show. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, new iPhones, new Galaxy Note phones, all that stuff, everything with a chip in it. It's time to talk tech. The website I should mention is techguylabs.com. It's a great place to go if you hear something on the radio and you say, oh, what was that Leo talked about? And you don't have to write anything down. Just go to techguylabs.com. I'm not pushing it because I make money on it. It's absolutely free. There's no sign in, no sign up required. You can even leave comments there. So it's also an alternative to yelling at me. And I know many of you listen and go, Leo, you're wrong, or I've got a better way. Well, you don't have to yell at the radio. That's not very effective, and it makes other car drivers think you're nuts. Just go to techguylabs.com and leave your comment there. We do ask you to log in with your Facebook or Twitter or Google identity just to prevent spammers. But we are not collecting your address. We don't charge anything for it. It's thanks to our fine sponsors, we're able to provide this as a service. And I intend to keep it running as long as we can for free. Tech Guy Labs, which should be forever. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's go back to the phones on the line from Woodland Hills, California. Glenn. Hello, Glenn. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hello, Leo. I'm looking for a Chromebook Plus desktop.
Ooh.
So I want the security of Chromebook.
Yes.
I've got to have, you know, the onboard data storage, onboard program, so I don't always have to be connected to the internet.
So you want like a computer and a Chromebook?
Well, yeah, and I've noticed all these laptop looking Chromebook Pluses are now out, but nobody seems to be talking about a desktop version.
Yeah, so there is something called a Chrome. There's two ways you can do this. There are all in one Chrome devices. You're right. Book implies laptop, so we don't call it a Chromebook. We call it, I don't remember what we call them all-in-ones, but the Chrome box is kind of like a Mac Mini or a NUC. It's about a hockey puck size squared off box that you hook up a mouse, keyboard, and monitor to, and now you've got a desktop computer. Huh. And they run Chrome OS. Now, you can't on these Chrome boxes, I don't think any of them offer the Android store. That's one of the things that the newer Chrome laptops do that I really like, is they give you your Chrome browser, your browser extensions, anything you can run in Chrome, you can run on there, plus anything you can get in the Android store. Not everything works. For instance, most Chrome laptops don't have GPS, so obviously the mapping programs won't work or won't work very well, but many of the other programs will. And that gives you a wide range of software. It's more secure. One of the reasons I like Chrome OS is much more secure.
Oh, yeah.
But it's more simple. It's secure because it doesn't do everything. It only does a very limited set of things. So I would look at a Chrome box. Chrome base. Thank you, chat room. Chat room's reminding me. The all-in-ones that are running Chrome OS are called Chrome bases.
Uh-huh.
And the Chrome base, Acer makes one, LG makes one. They're in neither the case of the Chrome box or the Chrome base are they very expensive. LG makes one for, let's see, Actually, maybe that's not available anymore. There's one more form factor I'll tell you about in a second. Let's see what the Acer Chrome-based 24-inch screen. It's an all-in-one computer. And it's got a microphone and a camera and all that stuff. And how much? I don't know. It doesn't have a price on it. But it's probably well under $500. It's not. Wow, that's a little pricey. $977. That's the price of a computer. Wow, why are they charging so much? Oh, it's an i7, 8 gigs of RAM. That's why. This is a powerful computer. But there are Chromeboxes that are, $200 or $300. There's one more form factor. I got Chromebook, which is the laptop, Chromebox, which is a standalone unit that plugs into a screen, Chrome Base, which is the all-in-one, and then there's Chrome Stick, which is an interesting form factor. It's like a USB stick, except instead of having a USB port on it, it has an HDMI port. You plug it into a TV. And then you add a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, and now your TV is a giant Chromebook.
Hmm.
So there are four different form factors for this. And I recommend them highly. I love the Chromebook. I think for students, anybody who's... The test is, can you do everything you want to do on the internet in a browser, in Google Chrome? You could even try it for yourself right now with a Windows PC or a Mac. Or even a tablet. Just can you live in the browser? For most people, that's email. And it could be Yahoo Mail or obviously Google Mail. Browsing. It's banking. You do have a full office suite with the Google Docs office tools, word processing, spreadsheet, presentation manager. And all of that's free, and it's part of the cost. It's kind of built into the cost of the Chrome OS. And by using that, I think you really get a much more reliable experience. Now, obviously, not perfect for photographers who want to edit photos, although there is photo editing software. It's not as capable as desktop software. Video editors, rocket designers, people like that, they're going to want a general-purpose computer. But for most of us, I don't really think you need it. I think a Chrome solution is a very good solution.
Great.
Hey, I thank you for the call. I'm glad you asked. I'm a big fan of these. You're seeing them now in schools like crazy because schools obviously don't have huge budgets. Most Chromebooks are well under $500. They start around $150. So much so that Microsoft is pushing a whole new form of Windows to compete with the Chromebook in school. It's called Windows 10S. Microsoft has one device they sell, the Microsoft Surface Laptop with Windows 10S. It isn't really a very good choice because it's $1,200. And I think one of the reasons people buy Chromebooks, certainly in schools, is the low cost of acquisition, but also the low cost of maintaining and running them. So a Surface laptop is probably not a good idea. But there are other companies like Acer that make inexpensive sub-$300 Surface laptops running 10S. The only thing about Windows 10S that distinguishes it from the big boy Windows is it won't install applications from the general internet. It will only install applications like your smartphone. It will only install applications from the Windows Store. So your iPhone will only install Apple store apps. And that's one way to keep it secure because Apple vets everything. Microsoft, I presume, is vetting everything in the Windows Store. So they eliminate a whole category of malware because you can't install anything that's not certified and signed by Microsoft. On the other hand, you can't run Chrome because there is no Windows Store version of Chrome. In fact, there's a lot of applications you can't run, kind of like a Chromebook, I guess. Well, kind of the opposite, isn't it? Oh, it remains to be seen whether schools are going to jump on this 10S. They have really jumped on Chrome. In fact, I think 21% of all laptops purchased for school now are Chrome, pretty much stealing most of Microsoft's market share. It is a huge growth area. Did I get that? No, 21% of all Chromebooks are sold to schools. Maybe that's it. That would make more sense. I would say the majority of devices schools are buying are either iPads, which I frankly don't recommend, or Chrome devices of some kind, Chrome OS devices of some kind. Big fan. For years, the default was, you're going to get a computer, get the one you have at work, which is usually a Windows PC. I'm not sure I can agree with that anymore. While Windows and macOS are more secure and reliable than ever before, they're still, as general purpose operating systems, capable of doing a lot, including installing malware. We get calls all the time from people whose moms answered the phone and somebody said, "This is Microsoft. You've got a bug on your system. Let me help you fix it for only $300. And the mom falls for it and disaster ensues and the hacker puts bad software on the computer. Well, if mom had a Chromebook, wouldn't matter if she bought it hook, line, and sinker. The guy couldn't do anything to it. She'd be safe. And if she did somehow fall for it, there's this feature called Power Wash. You go in the settings, you do Power Wash, it resets everything, you log back in, it's completely, you know, wiped, reinstalled, and ready to go, and it takes about 5 minutes. I have to say, that's pretty compelling. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Don't forget, techguylabs.com, your website. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Back to the phones we go on the Tech Guy Show. And who's been hanging on the longest? Gloria in North Hollywood. Thank you for being so patient, Gloria. I appreciate it. Yep, get on over to that phone. I'm sorry. Thank you. Well, I kept you on hold for so long. I appreciate your patience.
Okay, I ran to the phone so fast I almost dropped it. Okay.
Don't fall over. Now, do you live on Sunset Strip, Gloria?
No.
Oh, you're not that Gloria, huh?
No.
What can I do for you?
You mentioned months ago. Let me see. I have it written down. Email. Okay. I want to get rid of the email provider. It's an email provider and an internet provider at once. I want to change, especially.
I agree.
Google is free with Gmail.
I agree. You've been listening to this show, you know.
Yes.
Now, you don't get rid of your internet service provider's email because, unless you're going to get rid of the internet service provider.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. I've heard so many bad things about DSL Extreme. I want to get out of them.
Okay.
But because they provide both, I'll have Gmail, but can you recommend a good email provider, you know, that's not a bundle?
Yeah. So first of all, I should say that DSL Extreme is a former sponsor, but I still stand by them. I like them. It's one thing to hear bad things. Have you had bad things happen to you?
No, but I was thinking if I left them, those were the bad words that I heard. If you leave, you really have a hard time leaving.
So here's the issue, and it's not DSL Extreme's fault. The FCC allowed... actually required the phone company to let other internet service providers use their lines. So your phone company, AT&T or Verizon or Frontier, I don't know who it is in your area.
AT&T.
They went kicking and screaming. You know, the cable companies, they don't have... I wish the FCC had told the cable companies this, but you get your internet from your cable company. You can't... Nobody else can use those cable. But the FCC, for reasons unknown... protected the cable companies, but told the phone companies, nope, you got to let other companies sell internet service on top of your wires. Now, AT&T also, as you know, sells internet service.
They own the wires outside.
They own the wires. And they're being forced to let DSL Extreme and other companies use them. They don't like it. They make it as hard as possible. They give you all sorts of a hard time. You as the end user, they give, believe me, I've talked to them, DSL Extreme gets worse.
Yeah.
You know, they get also because they are required. The phone companies are required to let DSL Extreme put a server in their cages down there at the central office and all of that. And if there's a problem with the line, DSL Extreme will, you know, talk to the phone company, but the phone company doesn't like them. The biggest problem, you're right, is switching. And this is not DSL Extreme's problem or fault. They do it as fast as they can, but AT&T drags their feet unless. You're switching to AT&T, and then watch them fly. Mm. Then they jump. Not that AT&T would be any better. It would be very similar, wouldn't it? Because it's the same wires.
Yeah, I don't want to have anything to do with AT&T.
So, unfortunately, the way it works in this country, you really only have two choices, your phone or your cable. So, if you're not going to use DSL Extreme and you don't want to use AT&T, then probably your other choice is your cable company. Who's your cable TV company?
I have satellite with DirecTV.
Okay, you don't want... DirecTV does offer internet, but you don't want that. It's more expensive than line internet.
And I don't want a bundle anyway.
Yeah, and you don't want the bundle. So, and that's, by the way, what AT&T does because they own DirecTV.
Right.
So, but is there a cable... Well, wait a minute, though. Is there a cable company in your neighborhood? There must be. I mean, you're in North Hollywood. Is it Frontier or Spectrum? Who's... Who's your cable?
See Spectrum, because I get a lot of those. Strong...
You get a lot of email from Spectrum? Okay.
Yeah.
So Spectrum would offer you cable TV if you wanted, but they also offer you internet service. And if your house has been wired, which it almost certainly has, then you could call them and they'd say, well, you've got to get our TV. And you say, no, I don't want your TV. I'm very happy with what I've got. I just want internet. They say, well, that'll cost you $10 more a month. And then they get say, well, just tell me, what's the cost? Now, I have to say, in general, cable's faster than phone line. It's capable of more bandwidth. Mm-hmm. So if you've been unhappy with the speed of your phone service, you probably would get faster service. But cable almost always costs more than DSL Extreme or AT&T.
Okay. So right now, because I don't have any problems with DSL
Extreme. I'd stick with DSL Extreme, yeah.
Okay.
You don't have to use DSL. Now, I'm trying to remember. I think DSL Extreme offers Gmail. Don't they? Isn't Google your email provider?
I'm not very savvy with this high-tech stuff. I've had them for so long, and I just stick with what I've had. I must be at the lowest level of DSL strength.
You probably are. It's probably cheap. Like, it's $10 or $15 a month.
It's like $20 a month. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get internet and
And phone. Oh, that's a great... And email. Now, does it feel slow to you, or is it fast enough?
I don't know the difference.
Well, you would know if you don't know, then it's fast enough, right?
Yeah.
If it were slow, you'd feel like, oh gosh, I have to wait for this web page. Now you're happy.
Oh, I see.
So don't switch, because switching almost always involves pain.
Okay.
But you don't have to use their email service.
Right. I was thinking, since even though it's free, I mean, I'm not losing anything. Just go to Google and get Gmail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now what's going to happen though is everybody's emailing you at the old place.
Right.
However, Google offers a nice feature on Gmail that you can collect the mail from your old mailbox.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So if you set up a Gmail account, and don't, by the way, my suggestion, you might be tempted to use your first and last name at gmail.com. You're going to get more. Well, I guess it doesn't matter.
Take a chance. If you say caution, I say caution.
Yeah, I mean, I would. The problem is you want to make something that you can give out and people will remember. So you could say, you know, GloriaBigEyes@gmail.com or something, right?
Okay.
And that you're going to let less spam than if you use your first and last name. Or worse, if you could get, you probably can't, somebody's got it, but if you could get Gloria@gmail.com, that would be a bad address.
Oh.
You don't want to use a real name at gmail.com because spammers just automatically include that.
Okay, because right now with DSL Extreme, I have Gloria with a one letter and then at DSL.
Yeah, that's okay.
So it's probably gone.
Yeah, you could try it if you can get it. Now, the thing is, once you set it up, you can go into the settings there, and there's a POP and IMAP settings. And you can actually say, every periodically, go get the mail from the old account. So that way, you don't have to worry about telling your friends and family, oh, I got a new address. They can continue to use your old address. If over time they start using your new address, that's great, but they don't have to.
Hmm.
And
even something is, well, I shouldn't say small, because when I went to research email or internet providers, email providers, they didn't even list DSL Extreme. So even something as obscure as Gmail will...
Yeah, because what you're going to do is they list it only because they can do it automatically with some providers. But what you're going to do is you're going to give them your email address and your password, and they will do it from there.
Oh.
Now, I'm pretty sure DSL Extreme is using Gmail, so it'll be even easier. You're just creating a new Gmail account. One of the reasons I like Gmail is, as you said, it's free, but they have very good anti-spam protection. One of the reasons people don't like Gmail is because, well, Google... I'm not going to say reads your mail, because that implies like there's somebody at Google looking at your mail. But they run your mail through a computer, and the way they pay for this free service, they give you ads based on keywords they see in your email. That doesn't bother me. Some people it does. That's something to be aware of. Nothing's free, right? If you're not paying with money, you're paying with your attention. But I like Gmail. That's what I use. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nice to talk to you, Gloria. More of your calls right after this. Hey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're taking your calls, talking about tech, and I'm going to get on with the phone calls. There are a lot of people on the line. Let's go to Rob in Leonia, New Jersey. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing? It's great to speak to you.
I'm doing great. Every time I talk to you, my mom goes, her ears perk up because that's where she grew up.
Right. So you remember me.
I totally remember you. How many callers do I get from Leonia?
Not many, I guess. That's why now, when I spoke to your screener, I say Leonia. She doesn't recognize it.
Oh, but I do. You know, I just had this weird thought. Here I am, 60 years old.
Right.
And I realized my mom and dad grew up in Leonia.
Right.
Met and married in Leonia.
Right.
And they named me Leo.
See that? Okay.
Do you think there's a connection?
Yeah, I think
I got to ask mom.
Did you ever find out exactly what street you know?
Oh, you asked me that last time, and I forgot to ask her. I will ask her both those questions.
Well, what a memory you have!
I remember that street vividly. I can see it. My grandmother's house. Both my grandmothers. They lived next door, and that's how mom and dad met.
Isn't that nice?
Isn't that sweet?
Yes, I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Mom, what was the name of that street? Oh, I want to say Highwood Avenue. Does that ring a bell?
Highwood could be, yes.
Yeah, I think that
was
it.
All right. Okay. Yeah. That's like just a couple of streets away from me. So,
it was a beautiful tree-lined street, yes. Nice old gabled houses. It was really pretty.
Yes, all of Leonia. Leonia is known as the tree city of, it's only like, a mile square, but one of the things that they did is they put trees all on every single street. And so, so many people that come visit us or come through Leonia, they always remark about the fact that every street is tree lined, which it makes it very nice because it's so close to New York City.
I know. It's just, it's an easy hop into town.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at Highwood Avenue. I think this was it. I'm looking on Zillow. In fact, maybe I'll buy a house there. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I'll help you look.
I'm named after the town, for crying out loud.
Right. I think we should get you with something special.
I'm sure everybody in the radio land's enjoying our little travelogue here, but maybe I should get to your tech question.
My question. Okay. So I have a couple of other things. One of the main reason I'm calling is my 9-year-old grandson who loves technology and has an iPad and uses my wife's iPod Touch and uses my daughter and my son-in-law's iPhone.
Oh, wow. He is a tech kid for 9. That's good.
He's good at it.
Of course he is.
To him, you know, to solve their problems and or to he just wants to use it and play games,
sure
basically.
He
wants to do more, but my son-in-law and my daughter absolutely want to make sure.
I get where we're going here. Grandpa wants to buy him an iPad, doesn't he?
We did buy him an iPad Mini, which he uses.
Good. So put Apple's Swift Playgrounds on there. And don't mention it. Just see if he discovers it. It'll teach him computer programming in a very appealing and easy way. It's designed to get kids up and running. And who knows, he might be taking care of you in 10 years.
What was that again?
It's called Swift Playgrounds, and it's free from Apple. Swift is the programming language Apple uses. Swift, like the bird, and Playground, like, a playground. And it's designed for kids to play in it. And it's
great.
Fun. Okay. You will like it. You could do it with him.
Yeah. Okay. I'll start it up and have him explain it to me.
Yeah, there you go. Say, hey, I just found this program. What does this do? And let him figure it out.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
Yeah, it's really wonderful, actually. They did a very nice job.
Good. I that's why I love talking to you, because I tell him that I speak to you, and he looks at me like I'm lying to him.
He says, what are you talking about, Grandpa?
Yeah, well, I call you Uncle Leo. I call Uncle Leo, and he told me that you should do this. You know, I've done this for so many years already that he runs over to Grandma and he says, "Are you telling me the truth this time?"
Is he making Uncle Leo up? What is this all about? Tell him I'm named after Leonia.
That's right.
Yes.
All righty. So he wants a smartwatch, right?
Oh, wow.
And what he wants, I know what he wants. He wants to be able
Apple
to play
watch.
Games on the smartwatch.
Yeah, you can't. So just tell him to knock it off. Seriously, you can play very rudimentary games. The problem with smartwatches, A, of course, is, you know, it's a tiny little screen. But B, in order to preserve battery life, they can't put a real game on here. Best they can do, and Apple does this with their Apple Watch, is have interact with games that are on the phone. They're kind of dopey games. They're not the kind of games he likes, like Minecraft or action games. They're right. Things like you're in a spaceship and you're running out of oxygen, and every 10 minutes it gives you another message. Things like that. They're not fun for a 9-year-old.
Okay. So there's something that I saw on Kickstarter called Game Band.
Yeah, no. First of all,
right time. Right?
Learn from me. I've wasted so much money on Kickstarter. Anybody can set up a Kickstarter. And the problem is lots of these people have great ideas,
right,
but have no experience getting stuff made in China, which all of this stuff has to be made in China. And so they end up not shipping a product. I bought so many products that just didn't live up to their promise, or I never got. So be very Kickstarter, and they even say this, it's not a store. You're helping a company develop a product that may or may not make it to the marketplace.
Got it.
In other words, I wouldn't waste my money.
Excellent. That solves that.
Tell the kid, you know, there really aren't any game watches because it's just too limited. You can't put enough processor and battery in there to do anything that's fun.
Okay. So what would be like, is it just like an iPod?
You want to make him happy. You want to make him crazy happy.
Yes.
You go out and you get him a Nintendo. Now I want to call it the Swift. It's not. It's the, what is it? Switch. I got Swift on the brain. The Nintendo Switch. Now, this is not cheap, but it's a portable gaming device. It's in size about midway between an iPhone and an iPad.
Okay.
But all the kids love it. The Nintendo Switch. It's got great games. Mario Kart's really fun. The new Zelda is the best ever.
Uh-huh.
And that's much more reasonable as a gaming platform. It has enough processor, enough screen, and it's even got controllers that are more like traditional gaming controllers. It is a really, I think, a really great choice. But, Grandpa, it's not cheap.
Okay. What do you mean not cheap?
Well, it's hundreds of dollars. I'm going to look it up and see. It's been a while since I bought mine. $299.99. Say $300.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah, it's a game, but it's a real game machine. By the way, a smartwatch could cost you more than that.
Yes. Yeah.
An Apple Watch starts at $350.
Wow.
And okay. that's without the games. So I would look at the Nintendo Switch. I think this is a hit for Nintendo. They've done a great job making a portable game machine that any 9-year-old and his grandpa would love. And I think mom and dad wouldn't mind it either, because you can play it in the back seat of the car on road trips.
Ah, yes. Right now he's taking his iPod, iPod Air Mini with him.
Well,
that's going to be...
This is a more traditional gaming. This is, I love iPad gaming. There's a lot of great games, and certainly games for him like Minecraft that are fun.
Right.
But I would guess that this is more, when he says I want a gaming watch, this is more the kind of thing he's talking about, where he's got Mario, he's got, some Zelda, he's got some like real games with some real staying power. He could get a lot of mileage out of this.
Okay, because he likes things like the Squiggles, Plants vs. Zombies.
Yes.
Is that the kind of thing?
Yes. Yeah, he'll like it. I don't know if they've got it out for the Switch yet. I don't think they do. There's a very fun Plants vs. Zombies shooter game that's on the Xbox that I really love.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that he would enjoy. But he'll like Mario Kart. That's kind of a great game. Mario Kart. Get the Switch. It's unfortunately another $50 or $60 for the games. But get that Mario Kart 8 and you're set.
Okay.
Hey, you're a good grandpa. It's nice to talk to you again, Rob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow. Time flies when you're having fun. Almost done with the show. Last segment of the day, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, we got a couple of callers here, and they've been very patient, waiting all day. Gary in Florida starts us off. Hi, Gary.
Oh, hi, Leo. I love listening to your show.
Well, you got a double dose today. Thank you for being on hold so long.
Yes, and not only that, I wish I understood just 1% of what you talk about.
Oh, come on. You understand what I'm talking about, don't you?
No, I'm old, sickly, and tired.
But so am I. That's it. We talk the same language. No, I often tell the radio stations how grateful I am. We're carried by almost 200 stations coast to coast. And I always say to them, I know this is foreign language programming, but I am grateful Grateful to you for carrying it. What what can I do for you, Gary?
Well, I got Windows 10 on my computer, and I could not figure one thing out on it. I wish I had a 5-year-old to show me what to do. And I had to go. I went back to Windows 8.1, and I want to do a system. I did do a system image backup, but I'd like to know a software that if I buy another computer, I can put all of my operating system and everything on another computer.
Well, you don't want to move the operating system. So, and I know that's problematic because if you bought a new computer today, it wouldn't come with Windows 8. It'd come with Windows 10. Ultimately, you're going to have to move to Windows 10. The good news is if you're comfortable with Windows 8, Windows 10 is pretty much the same. They took some of the tablet-y stuff out, but I think it's very similar. I'm surprised that you find it confusing. I think that Windows 10 is a somewhat improved version of Windows 8. Don't feel that way, huh?
I was completely lost. I mean, my email was gone, my search engines were gone.
Well, that's kind of part of setting up a new computer. And that's I understand that because you had all this stuff set up. And now, you got to start with a brand new system. Microsoft used to have a very handy transfer tool. They called it Windows Easy Transfer. It was so easy, they took it out. So they have something now that you can get from Microsoft that does somewhat the same thing. I really don't understand. Easy Transfer tool is still in Windows 8, but you would want it on your new computer, which would be a Windows 10 computer, and it will bring your settings over. Some applications, not all, will work. Mostly you want to get the docs and the settings, your documents and your settings over. So what they've done is now they say, well, we don't have it anymore, but you could go buy this program from Laplink called PC Mover Express. The good news is it's only how much is it? Oh, wait a minute, $45. That's a little pricey. Well, that's what Microsoft's saying is, we don't make it anymore. Go get this $45 program. Thanks, Microsoft. That's their solution. That's disappointing, but I think probably there's nothing less expensive. Anybody in the chat room have an idea that something that he could use? Truthfully, one of the things so when you upgraded, you just did an in-place upgrade, right? You just took the Windows 10 upgrade. You didn't wipe the hard drive or anything, right?
Well, after I couldn't figure out how to use Windows 10, I did.
Yeah. Because it should have pretty much taken all your settings and everything, moved them over. I'm puzzled that you had this problem.
I mean, even the home screen with all of those boxes, I was completely lost.
It's all different, yeah. Well, here's one. Okay, thank you, chat room. Rick in the chat room says that a company we've recommended many times before for their backup tool, EaseUS, EaseUS, has a to-do PC trans free. It's a free version of their tool. Now, probably they're going to try to upsell you to a paid version, but they make good stuff for free. I would trust them. EaseUS.com. Now, this is all hypothetical because you haven't bought your new computer. So when you get a new computer, call me. Maybe there'll be something better out there. But for now, EaseUS.com, and they have a useful transfer tool that they don't charge for, which is kind of neat. Good for them. I think they have a lot of little tools that they offer as free downloads, including, you'll like this one, Downgrade Windows 10, which downgrades it back to 8.1. You already figured out how to do that. All right, let's get to our last call of the day. On the line from Wichita, Kansas, Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo.
You are a fan of as I am, of the Sonos, huh?
Well, almost. Let me tell you where I'm coming from. I am visually impaired, and I have a nice stereo system in my living room, nice speakers, and I'd never turn it on because it's so visual I can't use
it. It's a pain in the, I understand. It's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. So I know, and I've demoed the Sonos equipment. I know the app works with VoiceOver on the
iPhone. I got a better choice for you. Okay. It'll only cost you $45 right now. They're having a sale. An Amazon Dot. This is the little speakerless or practically speakerless version of the Amazon Echo.
Okay, I'm ahead of you because I've got the Dot and I've got the Tap.
So the beauty part of the Dot is on the back, it has a little mini jack.
Right.
That you can plug right into that beautiful stereo system. Then all you have to do on that stereo system is set it so that it's picking up the audio from the jack. You'll never have to touch the stereo again. Leave it on, set to that auxiliary jack, the auxiliary input. And now anytime you want to listen to music, you tell the Echo, hey, play this music. See, the Sonos doesn't have a voice interface.
No, it doesn't.
And that's what you want.
And the HomePod, I'd like to have...
Apple's HomePod will. Now, that's not out till December. That right. will have a voice interface. It also says that they have very nice speakers, but it is not designed to hook up to a stereo. Why waste that great stereo?
It's just sitting there collecting dust.
Your Dot is the perfect interface. That's what I do. I have my Dot connected to very nice speakers.
Right.
And then I just have all the music plays through the speakers. And it sounds fantastic. And you can get, it's easiest if you have an Amazon Music subscription. That's one of the negatives on the Dot. It doesn't work with Google Music or Apple Music or any of the other music services. The Sonos does, by the way.
Do you think that the HomePod is going to have any kind of interface similar to the Amazon?
No. But yeah, well, I have Siri. And it will only work with Apple Music. I can almost promise you that because it's Apple. And it will not, apparently, I've been told, not have an auxiliary jack. You have to use Apple speakers because what they want you to do is buy multiple Apple HomePods because you can pair them and make them stereo. If you bought five of them, you could make them surround. Supposedly, Apple says they have software that senses the shape of your room and furniture and tunes the music to flow around your room to sound better. You know how Apple is. Everything's magical with Apple. But it won't work with your stereo. Your stereo, if you want to use it, you need to get, for you, the easiest thing to do would be get a voice interface. The Sonos is not going to do it for you because you have to use the Sonos software on your phone or your tablet.
And right, and the future of that company is somewhat questionable.
In my opinion, it's going to get tougher because they're getting competition from Google, Amazon, and Apple. They're being eaten alive. And they were going to have a voice interface by 8 months ago. They said, we'll have it by the beginning of 2017. They still haven't done it. I feel like that's a problem for Sonos. So I am not bullish on it. Sad because I spend a lot of money on I love my Sonos system. But without voice, I don't think they can compete. Hey, thanks for calling. Thank you for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director. Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. Thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.